Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, Katie Weaver, and Brian Lynn. Kelly Jean Kelly will tell us what's trending today, and later, Ana Mateo will have this week's health report. But first, Jared Kushner, President Donald Trump's son-in-law and a top White House advisor, Monday denied he colluded with Russian officials. He spoke behind closed doors with staffers for the Senate Intelligence Committee for more than 2 hours. But before his appearance, Kushner's representatives released an 11-page statement prepared for the committee. In the statement, Kushner said he met with Russian officials 4 times during last year's presidential campaign. But Kushner said he did not collude with officials connected to Russia or any other foreign government. To collude means to work with others secretly, particularly for something illegal or dishonest. Kushner spoke to reporters from the White House after his meeting with Senate Intelligence Committee staffers.
Let me be very clear. I did not collude with Russia, nor do I know of anyone else in the campaign who did so. I had no improper contacts. I have not relied on Russian funds for my businesses. And I have been fully transparent in providing all requested information. Donald Trump had a better message and ran a smarter campaign, and that is why he won. Suggesting otherwise ridicules those who voted for him.
Kushner did not answer reporters' questions. In the statement to staffers for the Senate Intelligence Committee, Kushner said he did not know a June 9, 2016 meeting was set up to provide damaging information about Hillary Clinton. Trump's eldest son, Donald Trump Jr., had released emails that he sent to Kushner and campaign manager Paul Manafort about promises for damaging information about Clinton. Kushner said the meeting with Russian lawyer Natalia Veselnitska, Trump Jr., and Manafort was a waste of time. Kushner said he arrived late for the meeting. When he heard discussions going on about a ban on U.S. adoptions of Russian children, he determined, "My time was not well spent at this meeting. I actually emailed an assistant from the meeting after I had been there for 10 or so minutes and wrote, 'Can you please call me on my cell? Need excuse to get out of meeting.'" In the statement, Kushner also confirmed that he had 3 other meetings with Russian officials and representatives. Kushner said he was introduced on April 27, 2016, to 4 ambassadors, including Russia's ambassador to the U.S. The meeting occurred after a foreign policy speech from then-candidate Donald Trump. After the election, Kushner met with the Russian ambassador again on December 1st in Trump Tower. The meeting involved Michael Flynn, who became Trump's national security advisor. Flynn resigned after failing to disclose the meeting. Kushner said he also met on December 13, 2016, with Russian banker Sergei Gorkov after repeated requests from the Russian ambassador. Kushner is to answer questions from the House Intelligence Committee on Tuesday. Like the Senate intelligence meeting, it will not be open to the public and reporters. In his written statement, Kushner repeated what his lawyers had said earlier, that his report on contacts with foreign officials was incomplete. The mistake was turned in before it was ready, a result of a miscommunication, Kushner said. Meetings with foreign officials are not unusual for top aides to a candidate, particularly after the candidate wins a presidential election. But Kushner's meetings drew interest because he had not disclosed them as part of information required for security clearance and because of reports of Russian interference in the U.S. presidential election. Besides congressional investigations, Special Counsel Robert Mueller is also looking into possible collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. President Trump went on Twitter Monday to say that the investigations are a waste of time. He called it the phony Russian witch hunt. Trump also questioned why congressional committees, investigators, and beleaguered Attorney General Jeff Sessions are not looking into Clinton's crimes and Russia relations.
Poland's president has vetoed two of three laws designed to change the country's judicial system. Opponents of the laws have argued that they will harm the independence of the judicial system. Supporters say the country's judicial system is slow and needs to reform. Andrzej Duda announced his decision on national television. Duda said, "I have decided to send back to the parliament, which means I will veto, the law on the Supreme Court as well as the one about the National Council of the Judiciary." His decision followed more than a week of street protests across the country.
The first law would permit the justice minister to choose Supreme Court justices. The justice minister also serves as the top lawyer for the government, or the prosecutor general. Under Poland's political system, the bill would have put the Supreme Court under the control of the ruling political party. The president said the prosecutor general has not traditionally had such powers, and that he could not permit them now. A second law would give lawmakers the power to choose who sits on the National Judiciary Council. That council nominates Supreme Court judges. The vetoes appeared to surprise members of the ruling Law and Justice Party. Duda has been considered an ally of the ruling Law and Justice Party, although he ended his membership in it when he took office.
There had been unconfirmed reports of conflict between the president and party leader Jarosław Kaczynski. Duda said he would sign a third law, which would change how judges in lower courts are appointed. American and European officials expressed concerns about the laws after the full legislature approved them. At the time, the U.S. State Department urged all sides to make sure such reforms would not violate Poland's constitution or international laws. It also said the reforms should respect the ideas of judicial independence and separation of powers. The European Union threatened to start the process of ending Poland's EU voting rights if the laws were passed. Earlier, European Council President Donald Tusk said that he was disappointed that Duda had not accepted an invitation to discuss the laws with him before they were passed. Tusk is a former prime minister of Poland.
The Associated Press reported that Duda said he would present new versions of laws reforming the Supreme Court and the National Council of the Judiciary within 2 months. He said he would discuss the changes with experts. The legislature could reject the vetoes, but only with support from minority parties. The Polish president said he did not discuss the legislation with either the ruling party leader or the prime minister. He said a former leading anti-communist activist, Zofia Romaszewska, most influenced his decision to veto. Duda said the activist told him, "Mr. President, I lived in a state where the prosecutors general had an unbelievably powerful position and could practically do everything. I would not like to go back to such a state." The Nobel Peace Prize winner and former Polish president, Lech Wałęsa, called Duda's move a difficult and a courageous decision. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Mario Ritter.
Some nations have renamed parts of the South China Sea to strengthen their claims over the disputed waterway. But how much effect do such changes have on territorial disagreements? Indonesia is the latest country to take such action. Officials there recently released a new map showing the renamed North Natuna Sea. The sea, northwest of Borneo Island, includes an internationally recognized economic zone belonging to Indonesia. China claims territory that overlaps part of Indonesia's economic zone. Last month, Indonesian President Joko Jokowi Widodo visited the disputed sea area. His visit came a week after an Indonesian Navy ship fired warning shots at Chinese fishing boats in the area. The visit was seen as an attempt to send China a message that Indonesia is committed to protecting its economic zones. Foreign policy experts say Indonesia's renaming of part of the South China Sea was also meant to send that message. The name change drew immediate criticism from China. A foreign ministry spokesman said it was meaningless for any nation to change the sea's name. The spokesman added that South China Sea was widely accepted by the United Nations and international community. China's claims are based on its so-called Nine Dash Line. China says the line first added to a Chinese map 70 years ago, dates back about 2,000 years. It uses the line to define its historical territorial claims, which cover most parts of the South China Sea. But last year, a World Arbitration Court ruled China had no legal basis for its claims. That ruling was based on the United Nations Law of the Sea. Malaysia, the Philippines, Taiwan, Brunei, and Vietnam also claim parts of the South China Sea. This has led to disputes between China and some of its neighbors. In some areas, China has created artificial islands and built military facilities. Indonesia is not considered an official claimant in the South China Sea dispute, but it has clashed with China over fishing rights around the North Natuna Sea area. Lei Hong Hip is a researcher at the ICES Yusof Ishak Institute in Singapore. He says Indonesia's name change is another example of South China Sea claimants responding to continued Chinese expansion.
To some people, especially in China, when the sea is called the South China Sea, it naturally entitles China some rights, which is false. If the South China Sea belongs to China, then the Indian Ocean belongs to India, for example.
Lei noted that other countries in the region have also used different names for the South China Sea. Vietnam calls it the East Sea, while the Philippines calls it the West Philippine Sea. Calling the sea by any other names has not slowed China's South China Sea expansion. But some experts do believe the names can have symbolic value. Ewan Graham is with the Lowy Institute for International Policy in Sydney, Australia. He says if more nations change names, it could show more of a unified effort to resist Chinese moves.
If you connect the dots, China, I think, will receive the message that Southeast Asia has not rolled over in the way that it might have hoped and expected.
Another example of a sea name dispute is the Sea of Japan. The Japanese archipelago separates the sea from the Pacific Ocean. It also borders on South Korea, North Korea, and Russia. South Korea calls the waters the East Sea, while North Korea uses the term East Sea of Korea. Seoul argues that East Sea dates back some 2,000 years, but Japan renamed it during its decades-long colonial rule of Korea. South Korea sent the issue to the International Hydrographic Organization, which considers territorial sea disputes. But the organization has not chosen to order an official name change. According to Japan's foreign ministry, Sea of Japan is the only internationally established name for the area. The issue even entered U.S. politics in 2013. Korean Americans pushed for legislation requiring that school textbooks note that the Sea of Japan is also called the East Sea. The state of Virginia approved this textbook requirement in 2014. I'm Brian Lynn.
This is What's Trending Today. Millions of people tuned in to watch an epic race on Sunday night. America's top Olympic athlete, Michael Phelps, versus a great white shark, one of the most predatory animals in the ocean. The race aimed to see which creature could swim 100 meters faster. The race was broadcast on a U.S. television series called Shark Week, which is shown on the Discovery Channel. The channel had been promoting the race for weeks. It acknowledged that the shark would probably win. Great white sharks can swim about 40 kilometers per hour. Phelps' best times are closer to 9.5 kilometers per hour. But the program promised to help Phelps. Shark Week said, in order for Michael Phelps to beat a shark, he must become a shark. The Discovery Channel called the race the Battle for Ocean Supremacy. The promotions worked. Swimming fans, shark fans, Phelps fans, and viewers who just wanted to see what would happen made a date to watch the event. A Twitter user, CarrieLiz26, wrote, "If you think I'm going to spend my Sunday night watching Michael Phelps race a shark, then you're right. That's exactly what I'm doing." Another user, MosleyBanks13, posted a picture and wrote, "Watching Phelps versus shark with a dog dressed as a shark while wearing shark socks. Excitement is real." Of course, a few potential viewers objected to the race before it even began. They pointed out that great whites are not the fastest sharks. On Twitter, biologist Dan wrote, "Phelps is a coward. Why a great white? The shortfin Mako shark is 2 times as fast, at 60 miles per hour. What a wimp." But most viewers were happy about the pairing. They expected that Phelps and the great white would be swimming next to each other, like competitors in an Olympic swimming event. But none of that happened. Instead, viewers watched 57 minutes of the Shark Week episode. Viewer Maddie Jones, 515, was not happy. She tweeted a picture of Phelps with his angry game face before the Brazil Olympics, realizing we got to get through an hour of science for this actual race. The episode also included Phelps doing shorter practice races against simulations of 2 other kinds of sharks. Amazingly, the swimmer won against the reef shark. But when it was time for Phelps to compete against the great white shark, it did not happen. First, Phelps swam 100 meters in the ocean alone. He wore a suit that made his body move through the water more easily, and he wore a fin on his feet to allow him to swim more like a shark. Phelps went pretty fast, 38.1 seconds. Then, a video showed Phelps racing against a computer-generated image of a shark. The video drew on footage that producers had already taken. Sharks normally do not swim in a straight line, so the Discovery Channel created some incentive. They put a man on a floating device, dragging a fake seal behind him as bait. The shark followed the seal, and researchers measured the speed. Then they used the data to create a computer image of a shark swimming. The animal completed the course in 36.1 seconds, exactly 2 seconds faster than Phelps. For the race, the Discovery Channel combined the footage of Phelps swimming and animation of the shark swimming. In other words, man and shark did not really swim side by side. Instead, Phelps pretended to compete against a digital shark, with an announcer providing sports-like commentary. In general, social media users did not approve of the technique. They posted short videos of people rolling their eyes, stamping their feet, and turning away in disgust. Kyle Kazmir wrote, "We just wasted an hour waiting to see Michael Phelps swim against a computer-generated shark and lose. And that's What's Trending Today. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. You can choose your friends, but you can't choose your family. That line comes from American writer Harper Lee's book, To Kill a Mockingbird. Now compare her words to another famous expression, blood is thicker than water. This means that family will always be with you, while other people, with no blood connection, may come and go. Having strong ties to family and friends has long been identified as an important part of being happy and healthy. People need people. However, if forced to choose which is more important, American researchers now say friendship is more important than family. Their new study suggests that friends may be more important than family members, especially as we age. The study comes from researchers at Michigan State University. They found the importance of friendship on health and happiness grows as people get older. William Chopik is an assistant professor of psychology at Michigan State and was one of the lead researchers in this study. He says friendships become even more important as we age. He adds that keeping a few really good friends around can make a world of difference for our health and well-being. Chopik notes that we need to think of friendships as an investment in our future happiness. The Michigan State researchers considered information from two separate surveys. The first involved just over 271,000 subjects. They participated in a study on health and happiness. The second survey had nearly 7,500 participants. Its purpose was to study relationship support in older adults suffering from chronic or long-term conditions. In the first group, both family and friendships influenced overall health and happiness. However, in the second, researchers said that friendships became a stronger predictor of health and happiness as people get older. Also in the second group, unhealthy friendships led to increased chronic conditions. But with supportive friends, Chopik noted, participants reported being happier. One reason, people can keep the friendships that make them feel good and move on from the ones that don't. Family, on the other hand, will always be with you. They can be helpful and enjoyable, but can also cause troubles. Chopik explained that there are now a few studies starting to show just how important friendships can be for older adults. In general, he said, they show that friendships affect our day-to-day happiness and how long we live, more so than relationships with spouses and family. Friendships, he added, keep us from being lonely. But keeping a friendship for a long time takes work. If a friendship has survived the test of time, he said, you know it must be a good one. A person you turn to for help and advice, and a person you want in your life. This may be good news for people who don't have strong ties with family members. Not all of us are born into the families we need. But we all have the ability to make the friendships that we need. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Anna Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.